University of Alaska Broadcasting Service proudly presents Poetry by Oliver Everett, past Poet Laureate of Alaska and Professor of English at the University of Alaska. Here now is Professor Everett. In this, the first of a series of programs where we're going to be presenting the poetry of Professor Oliver Everett of the University of Alaska's English Department, we're going to take an opportunity here to talk to the author and also listen to a bit of his poetry in this first show. But mainly we want to learn something about Professor Everett as a writer, as a minister, and as a professor. And we hope that this will give you a small amount of insight, at least, in listening to his poetry, which you'll be able to hear in the succeeding 12 programs behind this one. Professor Everett, if a poet is trying to say something in a poem, which obviously I would say he's instilled to say something when he writes a work, does he expect the reader to get the same thing from a poem that he put into it?
No, not always. Oftentimes the individual writing the poem himself doesn't really realize certain levels of his own work. He may think he does at the time, but something comes unbidden to his mind and pen, and later on he may go back and discover he has said more than he really thought he was saying to begin with. And oftentimes the reader of the poem brings to it things that influence the interpretation too. And I see it again and again, that people do not get the same thing from the same lines, even as the original writer intended.
Have you ever had somebody bring up to you an interpretation of one of your works that just caught you completely flat-footed and never thought of it?
Oh, yes. It's happened many times when someone would question the meaning or see something that I hadn't intended. In this Green Peter volume that I published this year, I utilized the image of Green Peter Mountain in Oregon, which I could see from my study window in the 50s when I lived in Sweet Home. And I fused with that image the Apostle Peter, and I fused also in the Green Peter poem an image of something that I knew of early in life, where a tramp had laid down in a swamp and drowned himself in 2 feet of water. And I fused that image also in terms of the determination and courage that it took for a man to do that, but intending it to be an image of courage, but utilized for life in my case, the courage to live. But I discovered in a review of my book that someone in Oregon said I had called Green Peter Mountain a tramp that had laid down in the swamp and drowned in 2 feet of water. And the only reason it was said is that now there is a Green Peter Dam built around that mountain, and there's all kinds of water, and naturally that was the first thing someone thought of. Rather humorous.
How ironic. What would you say has been the most influential factor on you in your poetry?
Well, this would be hard to say. I suppose the thing that sent me that direction to begin with is that in some of my forebears, there seemed to be an artistic trait never developed. It often took its form in music and drawing and wood carving. And then on top of it, a sort of tragic situation of my childhood, which caused me as a child to be one who was inclined to be introspective, doing a lot of deep thinking even as a child. And I believe that as the tree is bent or the twig is bent, so is the tree oftentimes. And I think this had a lot to do with the interest that I've had in poetry.
Do you think that the 30 years in the pulpit has affected your poetry in any way, as far as maybe its direction or content?
Well, that's hard to say again. I do realize that oftentimes poems grew out of sermons I prepared or images I utilized someplace in a sermon, thoughts I probably mulled over. But in some ways, the ministry was more of a handicap than a help. I would say this on one side, because it kept me busy with other things. But however, during this period, I was always doing a certain amount of writing. And I find myself now as a professor so busy I don't have much time to write.
How many collections have you published of your poetry?
Well, I speak usually of 8. Some of them are very small. The first one was 1933. That put me through school 1 year by its sales and by me going out and reading from the collection. It was a pocket-sized edition that sold for a quarter. And then the next one was 1934, which I also utilized to some extent to help along in my schooling. And then again, in 1936, I came out with one in the publishing house, Augsburg Publishing House. But then let's skip on over to 1951. I think the first one of any consequence, as I see it now, was the Under the Juniper Tree in 1951, put out by Augsburg Publishing House. And the things I've published since, such as Studies in Black, God Has Been Northward Always, and this last one, Green Peter and Other Poems. I do have other manuscripts around that I've written over the years I probably will publish yet.
Is it a characteristic of a poet to need to publish?
I believe a poet needs an audience. And there is a tendency to not care if he doesn't have an audience. And I have had over the years many things that I stuck away in a drawer, and well, I had the satisfaction of writing it at the time, and it was like a therapy. It released some emotional tension or other type of tension in me, and then that was the end of it. Then years later, I'd come back to the same thing and probably polish it up a little bit, and there it is. But if I didn't have some hope of publishing, I probably never would have bothered those last few times of polishings.
Well, I ask you to bring a specific poem to read for us today, and I'd like you to tell us about this poem and then read it for us.
This is the poem Denali, which was the centennial poem in 1967 here in Alaska. It actually sprang up rather spontaneously one Sunday morning, but its roots go back much longer to a number of things I had attempted to do with the history of Alaska. And the image that is central here is the image of God standing on Denali or Mount McKinley, and with that much of introduction, I will go on to reading these 4 sections. He stands there dreaming on Denali, weighing vast tomorrows. In silent orb, shapes of unborn ages flicker. Blue glacier feet pressed down into beginnings of brooklets, the fibrous roots of world oceans. His translucent body wrapped in white mist is girded by a frostbow. And a flickering halo plays around all-knowing smile that looks northward to manana. Blue feet on frosted mountain, for what did Father Hubbard pray between the volcano smoking candles there at Katmai? And why did Vitus Bering shrug his shoulders 200 years from Pearl Harbor on seeing coastlines of Alaska? Was the future too distant? And why did he say, let the sand remain, as the Straits of Anian hovered in shrouds and a cold sea wind buried him. Did he wish to stay for always? Were Russian dreams at old Sitka only of furs and sea plunder? What Spanish dreams lie buried at Kodiak and Cordova? And why did Seward, by his icebox and a nation, ratify a wild purchase? And what were those nomads building by dreams who pushed northward for pay streaks? Ah, blue feet upon Denali Mountain. Ghostly squadrons pass outward from ancient whaling stations as at Teller and Brevig, and heaving ice packs beckon to Northwest Passage and Anian. But now a new jets pass poleward, leaving long vapor patterns as solid sky maps for tomorrows. Walrus bellow on drifting pan ice. Seals slip through dark tunnels. Nanook, an old polar sailor, slouches across the ice pack. White fox shadows and polar ravens drift across white vistas like soft tissue paper and old carbons an invisible wind has scattered. Honking wedges slice a shoreless sky, and Kugruk, old loudspeaker, calls northward. And what were man if he were heedless of his summons? Fur-coated laps in tundra fogs move steaming reindeer eastward from Asia, and dog teams move in a slow black wriggle between white hummocks. What are these sites that bristle with poised missiles, these cities pushing up their smogs by winter, these snorting, fuming mammoths that invade new clearings, these trails of diesel spore that push farther and farther into the long green and white silence? Satellites whirl and turn over, and men listen to space beeps. Vapor lines spread to new patterns. A 49th star waves proudly over new frontiers, while ancient Gothic forges over world rim shaft up their sparks and flashes over floating ice islands. And a world studies, considers, a middle sea in the pathway to tomorrow. A goatee is gathering white flocks upon Denali. On his staff are seven great stars and a lesser seven. In his hair of wool and snow, the North Star glistens. White smile looks north. Lights of green and red are playing. And a voice of endless waters pouring is saying, souls that stand on their tiptoes will always reach higher. Blue feet upon Denali Mountain, have you stood there gleaming through all the solstice changes of light and darkness? Blue glacier feet upon Denali, teach us to be worthy. Teach us to be native always in this, your great North country.
Denali, Oliver Everett, Poet Laureate of Alaska in 1967, right?
65 and 67. 2 years.
I sincerely hope that you will join us for the next 12 shows, where you'll get an opportunity to hear more of Professor Everett's poetry, and he'll be doing the reading himself. This is Dave Giesen for KUAC.
You've been listening to Oliver Everett, Professor of English at the University of Alaska. This program was produced in the studios of KUAC for the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service. the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service proudly presents Poetry by Oliver Everett, past Poet Laureate of Alaska and Professor of English at the University of Alaska. Here now is Professor Everett.
I'm reading from my Green Peter series of poems. From Green Peter and Other Poems, the book that was just published this year. In this particular series, I am not going to stop to read the subtitles, but I will be reading straight through all 12 sections. I write my own Bible and Midrash. I explore the void and the vast. In those white cliffs that tower, over dark cesspools, and in those dark closets where cherubs kneel in dark holies. If I be dark, I have a dark father, and the desert and the void are in me. My loneliness may scratch you as you purr, yawn, and spit at one another. Like the sacred seven, I speak in two voices, while the vine and the rose, like the Hebrew vowels, slip in and out among the letters. I use sharp gravel, though grit is seldom welcome at a rich man's table. I would be burrs for your ears and slivers in your thought. I demand, bring forth, bring forth. I am a string of beads, a wax candle, a bent knee at everyone's disposal. So many sermons pouring my boiling waters over greased hearts and oil feathers. Fedesvin I morkit, sfera brether. Shaved porker, I drip over wet barrels. The knife in me I roll outward and downward with my heart and my kidneys. My liver and lungs I give to the tub. I love you, and I am being butchered. I come down to you in knotty, rosy serpents, and you will only understand in part by eating of my entrails. I am drawn. I drain in red and white spasms. I lay my soul on the table, and I dissect it. Yet it is you whom I consider. Your ulcers and infections lie open. I do not ask what you have been. I ask you to become. The reflection of sky may be seen in a dark puddle. I demand an inward rebellion that will change you utterly. Beware, I may damn you. Does salt save a slug? Does the fat ass know the way to heaven? Who is not defiled who handles pitch? Lepers make room for themselves. Who can love another and not have an itch? Though you soil yourself, I cannot cease to love you, even when I find your soul enmeshed in dirty linen. If I open a cyst or dewort a wen, will you miss the drying tissue? I would abolish your virus. Perhaps I shall only disinfect you. From my window I see the fallen apostle with his cold face turned up to the sky, his beard covered with drifts, his tears frozen. Though the cold of a million winters hurls at me, I shall not withdraw my eyes from looking upwards, nor my thoughts from looking inward and downward. My child,
have no faith in systems. Systems are liars. And the bigger the system, the bigger the liar. Believe in causes that work down under. When the music stops, all must get down from their wooden horses. To be holy is to be empty and utterly unworthy. I have not willed you to be reverent. I have willed you to be you. You is inward, and it grows by looking upward and downward. Green Peter always looks up, does not weary, and the light continues, does not diminish, though its pilgrimage be to outer darkness. When you select your weird, go to it unflinching. Have courage like the great tramp who lay down in the swamp and drowned in 2 feet of water. The worth is not the completion. It is the task undertaken. And no word is ever truly finished. You must invest your soul in order to save it. The barfly drifting from tavern to tavern, the moth that dies in its silken labors, the bubble that rises from the marshy bottoms, all accomplish something. The spider spinning his shining web where the sunlight finds it, and where the cattle turn, splattering the lane while the stays of his nest are broken. The wren building her nest in the hole in the anvil, where the hammer blows will shatter the eggs that she lays, all accomplish something. Learning a common frailness in the loving labor of self-expression. Then why do you drag your feet up every molehill? Is it a small thing to invest in this matter of dying? You whisper of knowing prayer. I fish too in a dead ear. Prayer leaves me hungry. Shall I sing, pipe, dance for nothing? I say, expect no gain of me. I will make you a pauper. And I will scatter your soul in a million obscure places. Opiate of the call and the drug clergy so limply obedient. Souls have been lost between pulpit and altar, and for Buddhas there was never present nirvana. We are spiders sucking our own blood. There is blood enough in that other ego. We are givers of hope in our rivers of despair. We give peace unto others by our own unrue. The moon from his wrinkled edge thirsts toward our conical shadow. Vainly he draws at our cups and shrinks. It is a terrible thing to be drunk with love and shrinking. Snails cannot move without their houses, yet they lay their tracks before them. An oyster's pearls are purchased by its own irritations. Our name is Legion, for we are many. But we try at least to be good devils. And like the pregnant woman, we are waiting to be delivered. Shall I catalog the old sins? I find no gems in sewers. Let me look in the polished face and behold the lodestar. Probe the heart, find the center, then do. What do you know about yourself? What about the God in you? The tapers are solemn and whisper. Their flames go up like soul stuff, endlessly. The disease of the wind teases my loneliness. There is small praise to the sky in a gnarled stick and in old cinders and in Siponais Gisfault, who measures in what is dead and over. I shall come again and again to sit at your elbow and whisper to you as you gaze from your frosted window to where the sky and the void turn over. In the blackness of forests, I listen to the laughter of knickers drowning the footsteps of the rodents. Light flashes along the mountain walls, strangeness. I walk into darkness, seeing what I think are fireflies in the overspreading branches. At the river, I look out into aeons of greatness where the torchlights burn on the turnpikes of heaven. Angels trailing their tresses, changing their hairdos in a twinkling. The fireflies that trickle down the tree stems are the trimmings of their barbers. Night mills toward morning. A few light wisps flicker over the snowy summit. Four firs punctuate a marching skyline beyond which Jefferson of Snowcrest whiteness preaches. I stand, cold and majestic. The loneliness of whiteness draws me as I see silhouetted against the darker hues, the soul standing alone in the white mystery of silence. Smoky Valley, blue pocket against the mountains, Mecca of the forest brethren always smoking, incense from the alders where the logs are being offered, dark head of Green Peter watching, white head of Mount Jefferson watching. Whom do we worship with these constant fires and with these gray blue pillars?
You've been listening to Oliver Everett, Professor of English at the University of Alaska. This program was produced in the studios of KUAC for the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.